Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Why won't you listen? Argue, why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
Oh, my. Welcome to Spouting Off on Election Day, Tuesday, November 6th, 2018. The midterms that we have been talking about, everybody's been talking about. If you're a political junkie, today's your day. We are taping this a tiny bit early so I can get away to an election return party a little later today. So no calls, but lots to talk about. And we will love to hear your thoughts and comments next week at our regular time, 2 p.m. Mountain, 4 p.m. Eastern. And if you're listening to this on a podcast, always think about spouting off on Tuesdays. If you're in the Mountain time zone, it's Tuesdays at 2. And there's our dog. He's all excited about Election Day 2. I think it's because the mail is in. Anyway, we don't get much of that usually. Our dogs usually are very quiet, but occasionally we don't have the light on that says, quiet, quiet, broadcasting. Anyway, it is Election Day. And what do you do the day of the election when the ballots haven't been counted yet, when the election results aren't in? Do you just do predictions, predict, and then say what you think might happen? I've never been really excited about that. Occasionally, I can tell you that I have sometimes been prescient. I love that word, prescient. Some people call it prescient. I don't know what it is. Next week you'll call me and you'll tell me. I can be prescient about the trends of the left because I like to look at patterns. I like to look and see what the strategy, the strategic patterns of the left are. And when you watch them and you see pattern after pattern, the same thing over and over again, you get so you can predict what you think they might do. Now, even in a relationship, you want to be sure that you check it out, that you just don't make that assumption without saying, well, here's what I think might happen, but I'm not going to just make that assumption because we, most of us on the conservative side of things, like to deal in facts, not in wishes, not in hopes, not in dreams. We like to know what's really going on, even if it doesn't comport with what we would like. I think truly that is one of the differences between the left and the right. If you love reality and you would rather understand reality, even if you don't like it, then you're less likely to decide that today you're going to change your gender and tomorrow you're going to change your ethnicity and, you know, live in your own little universe. The problem with the left is when they try to enforce or force that universe that they're living in on the rest of us. As far as I'm concerned, I'm sort of a live and let live person for the most part, but that means you have to let me live and let live the way I would like. And I have to live and let live the way you would like, unless it's so basic, I hate to even say it, unless it stops me or takes away my rights and my freedom to live as I see fit. If it doesn't impose my, if I don't impose my will on you, and if you are not stopping me from life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, or even the pursuit of property, which I think should have been in there all along, then, excuse me, it protects me when I tolerate something in you that I don't like. I don't have to like you, I don't have to love you, and I don't even have to approve. These are the kind of basic ideas that we used to understand almost homogeneously, you know? We used to understand this about America, that America was the land of the free, that we admire and revere differences of opinion. We love to mix it up and argue. That's why I love talk radio. But that old phrase, I don't like what you're saying, but I would defend to the death your right to say it. Now it's, I don't like what you say, and I'm going to kill you if you don't do what I say, or I'm going to make sure that you lose your job, or I'm going to make sure that I ban you or embarrass you or smear you or mock you. This is an atrocious turn of events that we've had in the United States of America. And today, tonight, we're going to see just how many people approve or disapprove of that, along with other things. Now, this midterm election, it is such a patchwork quilt. It is not, we don't depend on the Electoral College. We truly have hundreds and hundreds of elections. And you can bet tonight that people are going to be spinning in all kinds of directions, regardless of what happens. Now, I'm concerned about a couple of individual states in our union, but generally speaking, I feel pretty cautiously optimistic about these midterm elections. I think that Donald Trump has continued to surprise us, continued to confound the haters and the experts and the people who are so very certain that they understand us and why we voted for Donald Trump in the first place. It is amazing to me that after 2 years, almost 2 years, well, it is coming up on 2 years, November 8th, I believe it was, when the world changed, really, our country changed, 2016, that not only has the Democrat Party not ever accepted the results of the election, even after they were appalled, horrified, disgusted that they thought Donald Trump might not accept the results. I always go back to that because it's such a blatant example of hypocrisy. The minute they accuse someone else of doing something, that's exactly what they do. And that was a perfect example of it. Nonetheless, I really think that the left still hasn't accepted it, and they're doing everything they can to reverse the election. It's kind of funny that they're actually trying to depend on votes this time instead of phony accusations to Brett Kavanaugh and 100 other things that were dirty politics. But if you want to know what one of the proponents of the left thinks about, we're going to have on, and this will be his second time on Spouting Off, a liberal strategist extraordinaire out of Colorado, Jason Salzman. He runs a liberal newsy site, mostly for Colorado and the Colorado election, which is really quite interesting. Loads and loads and loads of money is being spent on it. Jason Salzman runs the website ColoradoPolls.com. And we don't agree on anything. And I had a terrific time talking to him the last time I had him on. I think it was way back in May of last year. And so I decided to have him on because he'll be attending a totally different party than I will, an election night party. And we're going to talk a lot about what he thinks is going to happen and also whether he expects to be celebrating tonight or crying in his beer or maybe a combination of both. Well, so I wrote an op-ed, which just came out yesterday in Town Hall. And I wasn't, it's so funny when these things come up, I'm never really sure how they're going to turn out. And this one just almost totally wrote itself. It's called Walking Away from Cognitive Dissonance. It is in Town Hall. It was posted yesterday, November 5th. You can find all my pieces on Town Hall. Just go to Town Hall and search my name. That this is my fourth for Town Hall. And, you know, I enjoy writing these. I always hate it when I see a typo that could have been avoided. But then I figure, you know what? Let it go, Karen. Let it go. Anyway, walking away from cognitive dissonance. And the reason I wanted to bring it up is because I talk a lot in this piece about the retaliatory nature of the left and the way that if you don't say what they want you to say, if you question, this is the really big one, if you ask a question that they don't like, they're going to call you the obligatory smears and names. We know this already. And in my piece, I said that they always have an ist or an obe at the end of it. So it's either racist, sexist, homophobe, xenophobe. We can predict these things. So see, I can be prescient about that because we can predict these things. And something I've talked about a little bit here on Spouting Off is my fascination with cults. I love observing cults. Maybe it's because I'm always interested in what gets people out of cults, not only what gets them in, which is sometimes a little easier to understand. People want a sense of belonging. They want a sense of family. And sometimes they come from a horribly dysfunctional family. And so the cult exploits and understands human need for belonging and feeling like you're right about something, that you have a place to go, a place that people will immediately accept you. That happens in gangs, it happens in cults, and it happens in liberalism. What is harder sometimes to figure out, and I've been looking at this and maybe studying it for a pretty long time, is what gets people out of cults? What is it, for example, that has caused this wonderful, I'm so jazzed about it, called the walk away movement? And if you don't know what that is, it's hashtag walk away. And it is a movement to get people to just simply walk away from liberalism. It was started by Brandon Straka, a gay hairdresser in New York City, who began to ask some questions about liberalism. And in my piece, I talk about how it's really that very first question that gets people thinking. It's really that daring, having the courage to ask that very first question. See, conservatives don't really suffer from this. I don't think conservatism is a cult. And maybe I can argue with that about that with Jason Salzman, but conservatism isn't because we thrive, just like Jews, and Jews love to argue. We thrive on disagreement. We thrive on debate. We love knowing what another person thinks about an issue. It is very difficult to get conservatives to move all in the same direction because it's a little like herding cats. You just, you know, we like discussing policy. That's why talk radio works so well if you're a conservative and not so much if you're a liberal. So I am convinced that liberalism, particularly the liberalism of today, the kind of liberalism that we're seeing with from the hard left, really is a cult. Because if you dare to ask a question, even claim to disagree with the left's orthodoxy, you will be shunned, you will be banned, you will be hated, you will be mocked. And this is what they've been doing. It's such an anathema to America and what America is about. What I wrote about, and the reason I was moved to write the piece partly, is because I decided to post a meme, I guess you would say, about Judy Monroe Layton, who admitted that she lied about writing a letter. It was an anonymous letter. She claimed authorship of it. And then later, when Chuck Grassley and others decided they were going to go after the liars, including the one by creepy porn lawyer Avenatti, Julie Swetnick, who has recanted pretty much all of her charges of of Judge Kavanaugh, which oddly enough, nobody's talking about anymore. Nobody is horrified by Judge Kavanaugh anymore because it was revealed to be a hoax. Now, not all of it has been revealed to be a hoax yet, but I think it's coming. Nonetheless, Chuck Grassley decided to start pressing charges because they were taken for a ride. Most people who are watching this with a dispassionate eye knew that this was a last-ditch effort to tank Judge Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court. The motive, the need to get rid of Kavanaugh was obvious. It was obvious to everyone, and Democrats even said so. But don't get let me go on with that. So I decided, because the left has so adamantly and considered that this shouldn't even be a question. You should not even question a woman when she says that she's the victim of sexual abuse. All women need to be believed. Why do they all need to be believed? Because, well, a woman wouldn't call attention to herself that way. Meanwhile, Monroe Lighton admitted that she did it for the attention. So that's what I wrote about. So when I decided to post this on the Columbia University Social Work Facebook alumni, boy, that's a long adjective list, website or webpage, I posted it. I put a few comments up, which basically said, so all women deserve to be believed. What do you think about it now? And immediately I was called a troll. I was called a racist. I don't know what this has to do with racism, but it's the constant refrain. They even accused me of having poor ethics and that I shouldn't be allowed near clients. It's funny. They just make the assumption that I'm practicing social work now, which I'm not. I'm practicing talk radio. But nonetheless, they were, and finally, they banned me from the page because they could not stand to have someone question their liberal orthodoxy. Well, I say all that to say this. I have been keeping a list of the stunning contradictions, and I don't have as much time as I'd like, but I'm going to take the rest of the time before we bring our guest on to talk about some of these stunning and unbelievable contradictions that people who are voting for Democrats, and which we will find out the results tonight. If you have not voted and you're listening to me, don't vote for a Democrat. Are you kidding me? So listen to just a few of these head-scratching, ridiculous contradictions. That was the point of my piece, is that liberals are comfortable living in a high degree of cognitive dissonance. They don't seem to mind that they disagree with themselves from last Thursday. So here's a couple, and if I have comments, I'll comment. They want more and more laws, but they hate people whose job it is to enforce them, right? So they hate cops, but all they ever do is make more laws. It's conservatives who want less government and less laws, and they want cops to enforce the laws we have. They want the laws to make sense. They don't want the thought police, for example. They don't want to make it a crime to think something different than your neighbor. So they're the ones of big government and big laws, and yet they detest cops and they want to weaken and water down laws in general. How does that work? I don't know. Here's another one. They understand personal freedom and government getting out of our way and minding its own business, but only as it relates to abortion. That's it. If you listen to the language of the left when they talk about abortion, if you plugged in any other issue, I'd be right there with them. They don't want the government coming in between a woman and her doctor. I don't want the government coming in between a woman and her doctor, or a man and her doctor, or even a surgery for a spleen or a lung or God forbid, cancer. I don't want the government involved in my health care at all. And yet, the left really understands freedom to have an abortion, but they don't understand freedom as it relates to any other organ in your body, your lungs, your spleen. They want socialized medicine, and they're more honest about it today than they've ever, ever been. So how does that work? Doesn't that create some cognitive dissonance that you really understand that people shouldn't be telling a person what to do, but it's really okay if you get to tell someone else to do what to do by the use and power of government? Now, this is not an issue to bring up and discuss abortion. It is simply an example of how cracked the left really is. And the left keeps people so stirred up that the average person doesn't really ask that question. You know, how does that work? Here's another one you've probably seen in a meme. They hate this country, but they want to make it easier for people from around the world to come here for a better life. Okay? And yet they believe that America is worse than the Taliban, worse than any other country. America is the human rights offender. America is evil, terrible, rotten, and horrible. And yet it's really okay for a caravan of people to decide they're going to break into our country. And because they want a better life, they should be allowed to come. We shouldn't be able to vet them. We should not be able to find out who they are, if they're going to be a drain on the resources of the people and of our tax dollars and of our services and our resources. I said that. It's okay. Just everybody come in. Here's another one. It's not exactly the contradiction, but I always say this, and I wish maybe one of the national pundits would pick it up. It has become so obvious that the left hates this country. The further left they are, the more they want socialism, the more they want to destroy this country, the way that it was meant to be, the way it was created to be, and the way it was founded. They hate this country. Maybe they would love it if it were socialist, but they sure don't like it the way it is. So when they propose a policy and they say, you know, this is going to be better for our country. Well, if they hate the country, then why should they have an ounce of credibility when they're proposing things? I say that with the thought of our previous president, not the current one, who everybody, I'm getting off on a tangent here, but oh my, get me going. Our previous president often gets credited with being incompetent instead of just being malevolent. I think it's fair to say that his policies, if you look at them even remotely objectively, harm this country, especially the way it was founded. Even if you don't agree with free markets, with personal freedom, with private property rights, and all the things our Bill of Rights were designed to guarantee under the Constitution, you have to admit that the previous president was trying to dismantle those by growing government, by creating rights that people really don't have. If you give people rights, if the government gives people rights, they can take them away. The whole notion of restrained government is to protect people's rights from the government. My point being, I'm over-articulating today. I must be emphatic. My point being that why should we believe or agree or even give an ounce of credibility to the hard left, which has pretty much taken over the Democrat Party, when they are proposing policies and values that are the antithesis of what America stands for and what America is about? If they hate this country as it was founded, then you can pretty well guarantee that they want to dismantle this country the way that it was founded to be. Think about that one for a while. Here's another one for you, because I have a little more time. liberals are dead set against the death penalty because they're so worried about executing an innocent man. Even if he confessed, they are still going to tell you he could still be innocent. That's how passionate they have been against the death penalty. But yet they were perfectly willing to execute a man's reputation, that being now Justice Brett Kavanaugh, if it suits their political purposes. In fact, they're perfectly willing. They must not care about innocent life very much because they're willing to bring in unvetted illegal aliens that kill American citizens. I think they just think it's like, I don't know, collateral damage from their political point of view. Does this suggest that they really care about their fellow citizens, those compassionate, caring liberals who are willing to bring dangerous criminals, including MS-13, into this country so they can create a new voting bloc? They're always creating new voting blocs. Women, illegals, people of color. To them, they all are just another group that they can create as a voting bloc. I don't know. It's kind of crazy. And it does create tremendous cognitive dissonance. So those are just a few of the examples. I was looking at a few more here. So, oh, here's one I love. I love this one. Intersectionality versus cultural appropriation. Huh? What the heck is that? Intersectionality means that you can turn a, excuse me, I should have had an antacid this morning. You can turn a civil rights activist who talks about blacks mostly into an environmentalist because you can create all this intersection of leftist causes. So we want to make blacks pro-gay and we want to make blacks environmentalists, even though they don't really resonate to that. So they can combine all these voting bloc groups into one big, massive voting bloc. And then they want cultural they say it's cultural misappropriation if you wear a Chinese dress if you're not Chinese. So just, you know, this is crazy making stuff. This is, as I mentioned, this is the cognitive dissonance, the insanity, the constant contradictions and the crazy making contradictions of something that, you know, it's just trendy. Whatever you believe today, don't worry, wait a minute. Next Thursday, it'll change. These are constant contradictions. Maybe we'll have time to talk to my friend Jason Salzman about that after the break. We are going to talk to him about the election tonight and what he sees coming down the pike. And I can't wait to be with you live next week so that we can talk about the election results along with whatever insanity has transpired between now and next week. We're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, I will be pleased to welcome liberal strategist extraordinaire Jason Salzman. This is Karen Cataline on Election Day, spouting off with you. And we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Hadley, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is President of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Arnn, on the great principle of equality set forth by the Declaration of Independence.
The great Abraham Lincoln described the Constitution as a picture or frame of silver, built to guard or protect an apple of gold. This apple of gold was the Declaration of Independence and its principle of equal rights for all. This principle of equal rights, Lincoln said, clears the path for all, gives hope to all, and by consequence, enterprise and industry to all. There are many today who seek to limit or distort this great principle by employing a distorted definition of equality, an equality of condition or outcome, regardless how people live their lives. This distortion, if generally accepted, will lead to an America less prosperous and less free.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
Welcome back to Spouting Off. This is Karen Cataline with you on Election Day. And I am pleased to have with us in for the rest of our broadcast, Jason Salzman, a progressive journalist who blogs regularly at bigmedia.org, Colorado Times Recorder, I think it is, coloradopolls.com, and a host of others. He is not only a blogger, but a strategist of liberal ideas and causes, and it's way fun to talk to him. I mean, if I always had people on that I agree with, how boring would that be? So welcome to Spouting Off, Jason Salzman.
Thank you very much. Yes, that would be very boring to talk to people you agree with
exactly.
All the time. And I do it too much, though, because I don't have that many folks around me who do disagree with me in my everyday life, which is too bad.
Okay, well, then you'll have to invite me to your Thanksgiving dinner.
Exactly. Well, you know, for instance, for Halloween, my wife and I dressed as the Blue Wave. We found these ocean covered fabric, and she made this sort of wraparound. I made a toga, and I had a blue hat, and we had a blue piece of fabric that she held one end, and we shook it like a wave on the dance floor. So we were like,
"Oh, good,
the perfect blue wave." But at the Halloween party, no one objected because we're all in the bubble.
Because it was a liberal party, and I'm glad that you admitted that. And you've given me the perfect segue into maybe a few of your predictions tonight. You're going to be at a election night party for Democrats, and I'm going to be at an election night party for Republicans. Are you going to go home happy, or are you going to go home sad? What are some of your predictions?
I think it's going to be a blue wave, blue tsunami for the Democrats. I'm not sure that the federal level they'll take the U.S. Senate, but it's you know, the Republicans have to have a really lucky night to hold the House, the U.S. House, and the numbers so far look, if I were in the Republicans' camp, I'd be very scared. You know, it's basically, you know, unaffiliated voters are just not, they don't look like they're going to go with the Republican Party, and the Republican Party votes are lagging. The combination of those two factors, unaffiliated voting against the Republican Party and the Republican Party vote itself lagging from the midterms of 2014, make it look like it's going to be a bad night, but we will see.
Jason, you say it doesn't look like the unaffiliateds are going to go Republican. What do you base that on?
Polls, favorability ratings.
Polling? Yeah.
The favorability ratings, basically, yeah.
Okay.
You know, the Republicans are, the unaffiliated voters are unhappy with Trump. Now, that doesn't mean they'll vote.
What?
You know.
You say Republicans are unhappy with Trump?
No, unaffiliated voters, I meant.
Unaffiliated. What do you think they're unhappy with? The fabulous economy, the powerhouse of foreign policy, the lowest black unemployment rate in history on record, the lowest Hispanic unemployment rate, jobs coming back all across the board, 4.2 GDP. What exactly are they unhappy with?
It's really interesting because I would normally agree with you that those issues would carry the day because economic issues tend to do that. But it's not happening. And the reason is because he offends so many people of good conscience, you know?
You don't think the left has offended people of good conscience the way that they've behaved in the last 2 years? I mean, compared to the behavior of a large swath, really an institutional kind of misbehavior, really vicious hatred, even up to and including trying to shoot people while they're at a shoot congressmen while they're at a baseball game. I think Trump's language, and I mean, not even his language, his rhetoric is relatively modest compared to what liberals have been doing in the last 2 years.
Well, there's one big difference, and there's among others, but there's one that's very big. He's the president of the United States, and people expect more. I'll give you all of what you said about maybe the left is disrespectful in its way to.
They've lost their minds, Jason. Really, they've lost their minds. I mean, I don't know where to begin, and I won't because we don't have enough time. But go right ahead.
They're not the people of our country expect more from the president. That's what it boils down to. I really challenge you to say he hasn't been the most divisive president, you know, in our lifetimes. You may disagree with Obama, but.
No, he hasn't been. Do you actually watch his rallies, Jason? Not just what the media says about them, but do you watch his actual rallies?
I have not watched an entire rally. I've watched.
Well, no, you don't have to watch an entire one. But have you watched the rally itself rather than to listen to what other people spin about the rally? I mean, have you watched these rallies? His language in those rallies are more uniting. He's constantly, the media refuses to report it, but he's constantly talking about bringing people together. He's constantly talking about that he loves that people of all stripes, races, sizes, genders, whatever, are working. He wants to protect Americans. This is not a racist president. I challenge you, and I don't want to get too far off the beaten track, but he has been characterized as a racist, as a bigot, as a homophobe, and on and on and on. I challenge you, Donald Trump doesn't have a racist bone in his body. Has he been rude and obnoxious sometimes? Heck yeah, he has. But the media has framed him as a racist, framed him for things he didn't do, spied on him, and you don't think people are angry about that?
Well, it's funny you say you don't want Donald Trump to take us off the beaten path because that's what he does. That's what he's so good at. That's his expertise.
Give me an example.
While he may say those things that you say about our country, he throws in all the rest of it, which you acknowledge.
But it's not racist.
He knows full well, because he is so good at understanding the media. He knows that that's what's going to be on TV. And if he knows if he didn't say it, they wouldn't do it.
Let me ask you, Jason.
It's intentional.
He knows it's going to happen. Do you acknowledge that the media is not an honest broker when it comes to Donald Trump? They are not trying to report the truth about Donald Trump. They are trying to smear and paint him as, they've called him Hitler, as a Jew, you and I. To call this man Hitler is outrageous, and it's more outrageous than anything Donald Trump has ever, ever said.
Yeah, well, going back to your question, do I agree that he's a racist and all this? I don't like to get in those debates because I don't. I don't think he needs to be called a racist to acknowledge that the material that he presents is offensive and divisive and outside of our norms when we think about the president of the United States. But let me
give
tell
me
you
an
this.
Example.
I got to challenge you on one thing. What media? Okay. He should not be called Hitler, and I don't think a responsible media outlet would do that. So I don't know who you're talking
Thank
about
you.
When you say the media's called him Hitler, but I don't think that you're going to find
well, a lot
the legacy
of individuals,
media.
A lot of individuals have called him that.
Well, that's different
and
than
it
the media,
just,
Karen. That's a big slip up because please don't attribute that to the media. You know,
well,
I don't think that's fair.
Okay. There are individuals in the media that are doing the dirty work of the Democrat Party. They have no interest in even appearing objective. Not even remotely. And some are worse than others. I'll give you that. But as a whole, CNN, if Trump, and I know we're going all around because there's so much to say, and this is probably a lot of the kind of conversation that people have in their living room with some of their relatives. Right. Let me ask you this. Do you think Donald Trump is a racist?
You know, I don't call him a racist. To be honest, no.
Good. Is he an anti-Semite?
No, I don't see him being an anti-Semite either. Nope.
Good. Glad to hear that, Jason, because he's not.
Yeah.
And it isn't just that he has Jewish grandchildren. It's that he's been one of the greatest presidents for the state of Israel that our country has ever seen. And yet still they're calling him Hitler. it's outrageous. They have thrown everything they could at this man, and it's not working.
Very few people call him Hitler, and he does deliver comments, though, that are divisive and that incite racism.
Okay, all right, so give me an example of that.
Well, I think the caravan, to pick one that's recent and in the news, and particularly, in my opinion, obnoxious, you have this...
Well, what did he say, and why do you... So do you think the people in the caravan need to simply be allowed in just like that?
I think I personally do. These are destitute people, and our country is the home to the destitute, to people seeking asylum. It's what makes our country strong. It's what's made your and my families a great part of this country. And for us to turn our backs on these asylum seekers is wrong. It's exactly what our country is here
and
for.
Do you allow people to just come into your house without knowing who they are, what their name is, whether they're criminals, and whether they're going to demand that you feed them and clothe them? I don't believe these are asylum seekers at all. I believe this is yet another political ploy for the midterms. And there are people who have proven that
No, they haven't proven it. And the truth is, if it's a ploy, it's Trump. That was my point. He's the one that's suddenly pointing to these caravans, which have been coming
There's
towards
thousands
this country
and
for
thousands
years.
Of people.
So all of a sudden, before the election, that's when he's dispatching troops to the border, and he's talking about how big a threat it is. And how
would
and
you
how
get rid of our immigration laws altogether? Because that sounds like what you are advocating.
I mean, your question is actually insulting. When I let someone into my dinner room who I don't know, well, yes,
without
I would.
Asking them, you're not going to vet them. You're not going. And when that person comes into your house because your door's unlocked, they're going to demand that you feed them, clothe them, and give them medical care. And if you don't, you're a xenophobe.
Our country can afford to. Offer this to these people,
our
and you say you don't know why they're coming. You don't even believe they're asylum seekers. Do you know what's going on in El Salvador and Honduras right now?
What I've heard, El Salvador is in better shape now than it has been in the past. And all you need to know is, does that mean that everybody all over the country, shall we take in the entire world into the United States, and not be able to say that the people who are already here, who are who may be in poverty by virtue of Democrat policies, I might add, they deserve preference over people who've just decided that they're going to cross our border illegally. It sounds like you don't believe in any immigration laws at all. Would you impose any immigration laws?
Yes, of course. They're not. It's not as if they're not vetted. They are vetted.
No, they're not.
They go through a judicial process in parts of our... When people apply to immigrate to our country, they are vetted. They are. That's not true.
But these people are not doing that. They decided in thousands. And by the way, I hear that because Donald Trump is projecting a strength, that he is not going to let people just decide to skip our laws, and he will have the military on the border to protect our borders, or you don't have a country, that the caravan is actually dissipating. They were supposed to get here by election day. And if you don't think that there is timing related to this, that they were suddenly deciding to come three caravans because of the midterm elections, and frankly, I think it's lousy strategy. I mean, I don't know what the left was thinking, because the strategy of thousands of people coming to our borders when they have refused to follow the law. They did not need to walk across countries. And of course, they didn't. They were taken in buses. They are well fed, well cared for. It was a terrible strategy. Terrible.
There's no evidence. You're repeating misinformation that the left actually paid for them. A and B,
activists,
these caravans dissipate. They're not. This is not a unique thing. The caravans have been coming, and they often dissipate as they walk through Mexico because they decide to stay in Mexico. So overall, the issue is a distraction for Donald Trump. And his focus on it in his rallies and his rhetoric, which is ramped up, the divisive rhetoric is ramped up to the point where even Fox News wouldn't air the commercial that he made because they deemed it so offensive and so actually racist. Fox News, that's you.
I guess you do.
What do you think of that? That's you
racist.
Guys. That's you, Fox News.
So that doesn't bother me. I don't feel obligated to defend establishment Republicans. I never have. Never.
Good.
I'm happy to criticize establishment Republicans. Paul Ryan is one. He is a globalist. You'd love him. He's a globalist.
Yeah.
You know, we have a lot of globalist Republicans. And frankly, and this is a little bit of a segue, I believe the immigration issue and the globalist Republicans is one of the biggest reasons why there are Republican never Trumpers. It's not because of his style. It's not because of his words. It's not that at all. If they had a guy who was just like Trump, but he towed the company line on globalism so they could have cheaper labor, they wouldn't be complaining about his style. Let's face it, George Bush had a lousy, rotten style, and they defended him all the way, every bit. So it is because Donald Trump believes in taking care of America first. And that's not racist. It has nothing to do with racism at all.
I don't like to get into accusing him of being a racist. I think he uses racism as a way uses racial divisions and
That's an unfair thing to say, because it's always the Democrats, many of whom really are racists, who are constantly looking at every issue through the gauze of race. And that is something that I had a list of questions I wanted to ask you. God, I have to have you on again soon. Maybe next week. Maybe next week we'll do a an election wrap up, and especially if you're unhappy, then I'll invite you on.
Right.
If you're happy, unhappy, and I don't think I want to do that. No, but this whole notion that everything is about race, everything. I begin to wonder,
I just heard you say you think it's the Democrats who are racist. I was surprised, because you're actually employing the racist attack line that you find so abhorrent. Who is the racist Democrat?
Well, here's what I find. I find that there is something called racism, and what it and it has been watered down to such an extent. Here's the paradox that I see, and I want to give you a chance, so I don't want to go too far with this because I have a whole theory about this. The left is wonderful at broadening definitions until they mean nothing. The left has used the term racist for so long that using the term black hole is now racist. Believing in borders is now racist. Not giving every Academy Award to a black person is racist because they get so much political mileage out of it. Meanwhile, it hurts the cause of real racism. I'll tell you what was really racist. The guy that killed 11 Jews 2 weeks ago, that was racist. He killed them because they were Jews. That is racism.
Yeah,
and you don't do anybody a favor.
I mean, we've been through this. I agree with you on this. I think that that people throw around the word racism too far. One thing I do would disagree with you, and I think this might be because you don't know well enough that the actual people who sometimes call things racist that don't rise to that level, in my opinion, is it's not because they think it gives the Democrats an advantage. I don't think. I think it's because they feel it. These aren't even Democrats.
I don't think we need to argue about that.
But the bottom line is, hey, if you're asking me, I agree with you that the use of the word racism has gone too far on the left.
Well, my question is, what does the left have if it isn't calling people racist, sexist, homophobe, bigot? I don't understand what the left is pushing. Why don't you tell everybody, like, what's the policy? What is the left's policy other than raising taxes and calling everyone a racist?
It's providing health care to everyone who needs it. It's basically European style Western
socialism.
It has to do with an economic agenda that has the government working with the people to improve their lives and to manifest the values that we have in policy, which result in everyone being more equal and having access to the basic needs and freedoms and opportunities that we want in our lives.
The left basically proposes these policies despite the success of Donald Trump's policies, which they must ignore. I mean, they're so hell-bent on policy. Do you think that the policies you're talking about would create greater prosperity than the ones that Donald Trump is actually putting into action, getting people off welfare, having them actually be able to live their own lives and not be wards of the state? I mean, are they saying that they hate and despise what's happening in this country right now, or are they just conveniently ignoring it?
Well, there's still, I mean, number one, Donald Trump's policies, have not, what we have is an expanding economy around the world that has started well before Trump got in office. So that's, you can't attribute this to Trump, as we know. But secondly,
Barack Obama had a 2% GDP. That was the most I think he ever had. We were in a great malaise, the weakest recovery from a recession ever. And basically, Donald Trump has succeeded by reversing all the horrible, rotten, stinking, lousy policies of Barack Obama. That's why America is thriving.
What's happening is not, it was the same under Obama. And this, I can criticize the left on this too. And going back decades, that workers in our country, unfortunately, haven't seen the growth that the rich have. Wages have stagnated. They've gone, I'll give you, they've gone up a little bit under Trump, but not higher, not
more
much
than a
higher
little
than inflation.
Do you want everybody to make
2%
the same?
And inflation is actually just barely below, I think, the wage increases that we've seen. And they're still way below what they need to be for the working class to participate in the economy. Something has
to be participating
done.
A heck of a lot more now than they were under Obama, who just had them all on food stamps.
the unemployment is down. It's true. It's not just
way down.
It started with
way
Obama,
down.
but the reason why people are angry with the economy and their place in it, and that helped fuel what you know the rise of Donald Trump, is that they haven't been getting there what they feel, and I agree, is the fair shake that they should get, and that's because the rich
they're
have
angry
too much
with
power
the economy,
in our
really?
Country.
I think people are thrilled with the economy. I mean, Donald Trump is delivering what politicians constantly promise, but never deliver. Politicians promise greater safety, greater security, more peace, and more prosperity. And Donald Trump is delivering on that in less than 2 years. 2 years! And still the left is screaming and whining and complaining because I don't think they really want any of those things.
He wanted to strip millions of people of health care by repealing Obamacare. No,
you know who stripped people of health care? Obamacare stripped people of health care. I know people personally who were bumped off their health care. They liked their health care. Remember that lie? If you like your doctor, you can keep it. If you like your plan, you can keep it. They got letters after letters after letters. They were canceled off their health care. So that is a lie. Because it was Obamacare that forced people
overall,
off their plan.
Karen, please. You may be right. You may be right that some people did get booted off their health care. But overall, the uninsured rate in our country went down by double digits. And you can say it's not right and it's costly or whatever you want to say. But please don't say that Obamacare didn't insure more Americans, because it did. That is a fact. There was problems with the insurance, the individual market, and it, you know, you can
insure more Americans by putting more people on the public dole. That's how they insured them. I mean,
yeah,
he basically, forced them to take a policy that they couldn't afford, and then they needed, subsidies in order to pay for it.
No, they got on Medicaid, and then some got on subsidies, and many got on
Medicaid.
Many got
subsidy.
on the it's public health insurance. Yeah. Absolutely.
Medicaid is
God.
A subsidy.
God bless them.
See, what you're
like
not
that.
Admitting.
That's what our country wants.
What? I'm losing you here. Hello?
We want them to be on the public
I think they
system.
Wanted them to be on the public dole. I think that's really been
the
plan of the left all along, is to make people more dependent on government.
That's the whole idea of Obamacare, was to expand Medicaid.
To make
exactly.
people dependent on government.
That's not secret. Yeah. No, not dependent.
No,
not
it
dependent.
Isn't. Well, it's like enabling. You know that I'm a social worker, right? And when you enable someone and you make them dependent, then you need them to remain dependent so that you can have power over them. That's the antithesis of everything this country was founded upon, which is the greatest amount of freedom with the smallest amount of government so people can be in charge of their lives. But you can't have power, growing power in government, if you allow people in charge of their lives. That's why that is the fundamental difference between the left and the right, or conservatism and leftism. That's it.
I agree. I hear you. I think we can agree on that. Insofar as you spin it a different way, I say that the government.
Well, I think it's evil. I think it's evil to make people dependent on you so you can be powerful and they can be powerless. I think that's an evil thing. And you don't. That's why we disagree.
Right. No, I.
We should end now because we.
Your conception of evil is beautiful and kind to me, so I embrace it fully. Thank you for calling me evil. You're very kind.
Why?
Because I agree with it.
I think it's compassionate. Why do you like my conception of evil? Why do you think that's a good way to be? I just got to understand this.
Because it what it does is it says that through our government, we are going to provide for the poor to have the opportunity to succeed in our great country. And that
so is it
providing.
Well, is it generous to stick your hand in somebody else's pocket and give it to who you want to give it to, and then you call yourself generous? That's not generous.
Yeah.
That's not compassionate.
No. Well, when you know, I love it when conservatives say there's this invisible hand of the you know, that's going to take out of the generosity of their hearts and give to those who need it through churches, through community groups, through whatever.
Conservatives are a lot more generous with their charity than Democrats, than
Maybe
liberals.
They are.
And that's a fact.
Fine.
You know,
well,
we have 1 minute left. I'm going to extend for 1 second because I just want to ask you this. We'll just have to continue this. And I thank you so much for being a good sport. I get passionate. You get passionate. It's an election day. It's about as passionate as we're going to get because it's election day. I want to know, do you think that Kavanaugh was a good strategy? I mean, I don't know if you think it was a strategy, but they're finding out that this was, I believe it was a strategy, but was this a good thing for Democrats to do, honestly?
Yeah, because I think it was heartfelt. I don't think there was any strategy to it. Yes, absolutely.
I kind of thought you'd say that. I thought it hurt them, and it helped us tremendously, because I, being a social worker, I looked very carefully at that. We'll just have to talk about that next time. I think it was a strategy. I think it was a last-minute Hail Mary pass because they couldn't stand the idea of having a conservative in that position. And I think it came back to bite them. I really do. Go ahead.
I don't think so. That's debatable because it energized both sides. And looking at the way the election's going now,
that's
I think
true.
The Democrats are in a pretty good position. But we will know at 8 o'clock tonight, or perhaps in the next few days.
And I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say that I am cautiously but very optimistic that we will indeed keep the House nationally and the Senate. I am quite optimistic about the election nationally. I'm not as optimistic in Colorado, and we didn't really talk about it, but I don't think Colorado's going to do so well.
Yeah, that's smart. That's good analysis.
And so we'll see. We'll talk either off air, or I'll have you on next week. Tell everybody where they can read your stuff and they can contact you and argue with you and whatever else they want to do.
Thank you. Yes. Go to Colorado Times Recorder. That's ColoradoTimesRecorder.com. Or just Google my name and all kinds of provocative information for a conservative audience will emerge.
You are nothing if not provocative, Jason Salzman. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope to have you on again soon. And I love that you love to argue. It must be our Jewish genes. I'm sure that's what it is. Okay.
Thank you. It's very good to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Great having you too. Thanks for doing it. And that's all we have time for on this edition of Spouting Off. You can visit me at my website, see all my op-eds, blogs, blog posts, and of course, a full archive of Spouting Off. This is show number 53. So you can do that at my website, www.karencataline.com. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter at karencataline.com KarenCataline.com. Thank you to Doug, my producer, and to BBS Radio. Thank you to HW, the multi-talented guy with the IQ greater than that of a small soap dish. And tune in next week when we'll find out the results of the midterm elections. And there will be way lots more to talk about here on Spouting Off.